Today on Main Calling, pedestrian safety, an encore presentation. Pedestrian deaths spiked last year in Maine and continue at an alarming rate. The state and the city of Portland have kicked off campaigns aimed at preventing these fatalities and are urging motorists to slow down and look out for those on bikes and on foot. In Cumberland County, the district attorney will now consider pressing charges in all vehicle crashes that injure or kill a pedestrian or cyclist. I'm Keith Shortall, and today we'll listen back to our earlier program that explored some of the contributing causes behind the problem, including distracted driving due to smartphones. We also discussed the trend toward larger SUVs and trucks, which have larger blind spots, how to make our rural roadways and urban intersections safer for all of us. Main Calling is just ahead.
Support for Main Calling comes from Rennie's, a Maine shopping adventure throughout Maine. Now open in Bangor, Waterville, and Augusta. And by Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering health care, education, and support to islands and coastal Downeast communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
I'm Keith Shortall, and this is Maine Calling. It's happening more often in Maine. A pedestrian gets hit by a car and is injured or killed. Why are these crashes on the rise, and what can be done to prevent them? Joining us today to talk about pedestrian and bicycle safety are Lauren Stewart, Director of the Maine Bureau of Highway Safety, Greg Jordan, Assistant City Manager for the City of Portland, and Andrew Zaro, Executive Director for the Bicycle Coalition of Maine. We invite you to join the conversation. As always, is there an intersection in your community that you're afraid to cross on foot or on a bike? What kinds of driver behaviors are you worried about? And what do you think can be done to make our roadways more safe? Send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Welcome, and thank you for joining us. We're all aware, sadly, of the recent fatalities in Maine involving pedestrians, including the recent death of a man who was struck on a median strip in Portland, which we will talk about. But let's begin by describing the problem. Lauren Stewart, how would you assess what's happening now between pedestrians and bicyclists and drivers in Maine?
Yeah, thank you very much for that, Keith. It is an epidemic of a problem here in Maine where pedestrians and bicyclists no longer feel safe sharing the roadways with motor vehicle drivers. There's a whole bunch of things that we could, you know, speculate are behind that, but the real culprits are distracted driving is a huge part of it. Also very difficult to capture, but people are either, you know, in their own mind, they are on their phones, even though they aren't supposed to be. They're distracted with, you know, the errand that they need to run. And a lot of times they're also driving in excess of the posted speed limit. Which makes those crashes more dangerous and worse, and the outcomes less likely to be in favor of the bicyclist or pedestrian. So those are a couple of the causations that we're seeing. Our pedestrian fatality numbers were pretty low. They kind of went up and down in a zigzag between 2016 and 2020. So we'd have a year with a single digit, and then we'd have a year with double digits. And it just kind of went up and down each year. But since 2021, the number of fatalities has remained in the double digits. And we're looking at 2021. In 2025, 28 people were killed as pedestrians or bicyclists on Maine roadways. And that's just unexcusable.
Yeah. We'll go to Greg Jordan, Assistant City Manager of the City of Portland. I guess same question to you. From where you sit, what do you see, or how do you describe the problem?
Well, thank you, Keith. We're seeing the same trends in the City of Portland. Obviously, Portland has an urban fabric to it. And so in some cases, how we sort of look at and assess the problem is a little bit different than the state as a whole. But in terms of the trends, we are seeing a gradual uptick in both serious injuries and fatalities, even though the numbers on sort of an absolute basis are fairly low. If you look at the last 20 years, you know, we were averaging between, say, 0 and 1 fatality per year. The last 10 years, we were ticking up to, say, between 1 and 2. And as you indicated, last year in 2025, we had 4 tragic fatalities in the city of Portland. And, you know, as we sort of assess what is really going on, I think everything Lauren mentioned is right on the mark. What we see here in Portland is also that a lot of these crashes are happening either at night or at dusk. They're happening at intersections. And so I think those two things in particular, along with speed, along with distracted driving, along with our broader road design that we all know does favor the automobile over the pedestrian and the bicyclist. It's those two sort of areas, along with speed, that we're really zeroing in on here in the city of Portland.
And Andrew Zorro, from the perspective of the Bicycle Coalition, same question to you. How would you describe what's happening now?
Keith, thanks for having us on. The Bicycle Coalition of Maine is the statewide advocacy organization making Maine safer and more enjoyable for people who bike, walk, and roll. We've been around for about 35 years, and I could not agree more with the previous two guests that we are in some uncharted territory right now. 2025 was the most deadly and dangerous year in Maine's history for pedestrians specifically. And we are seeing that trend increase over time. 2026 is also off to a pretty rough start, and we are halfway through the year. You know, there are a few reasons why we're starting to see this. A couple of the others have already mentioned them. But this is not just about bad drivers or careless pedestrians. It's about a transportation system that often, too often, is putting people walking in direct conflict with fast-moving vehicles. Our roads, for the most part, are designed for speed. So many of the roads, mostly many state roads, municipal roads going through Maine's communities, are designed first and foremost to move vehicles through as quickly as possible. And that could include village centers, main streets, school routes, bus stops, commercial corridors, just neighborhood streets in general. And so if a road is designed like a highway, people will drive like they are on a highway. And I know we'll talk about the crash and fatality that just happened on Marginal and Elm, but that's a good example. Speed is especially deadly for people walking, and those risks are increasing with the rate of speed. So the death rate or likelihood of death increases at around 10% at 23 miles an hour, 50% at 42 miles an hour, and 90% at 50 plus miles an hour. Overall, cars are getting bigger. People are distracted. There is less enforcement or expectation of an enforcement, and BCM is very involved in working with district attorneys across the state on that. Yes, as Greg said, crashes are happening in darkness as well, but I think that gets to our issue. Maine has a significant infrastructure problem around things around infrastructure, better lighting, adequate sidewalks for pedestrians or bike lanes for cyclists. And overall, you know, no one municipality, no one community is going to solve this, but the Bicycle Coalition of Maine is here to work with the legislature, with whoever's in the Blaine House, with our partners at the, you know, in cities and towns, city halls and town halls, and the, you know, our advocates, our wheels and boots on the ground. So it's quite a tall order, but the trend we are seeing is scary. And we are very clear in calling this, especially after 2025, a public health crisis. If we saw these sort of injuries and fatalities for any other type of violence outside of traffic violence, I believe that we would be acting a lot more swifter than we are right now.
Let's start with some of, you mentioned a whole lot there, and I want to go through all of it sort of in a little bit more detail. So let's start with distractions. I think everyone thinks it's what comes to mind first or near the top is the smartphone and distractions, distracted driving. Maine has a law, which is pretty clear. You're not allowed to hold the phone. You're not allowed to email or text, even if it's in a holder. Basically, you're not supposed to be using your phone except for certain voice to text. I I think we all agree that people violate this constantly. Is there something we could do in terms of policy and or public messaging? I know there's been some effort to do this, but what could we do about this problem? And Lauren Stewart, I'll start with you.
Yeah, thanks for that question. And, you know, I wish there was a magic answer. We've been doing public education for a very long time regarding cell phone specific or mobile phone specific distraction, because everything you said is true. It's not allowed at stop signs. It's not allowed at red lights, period. You're not supposed to have that phone in your hand. But you're right. People continue to do it. Each year we conduct an annual observational survey of drivers, and we look at whether they have, you know, an earbud in the ear, whether they have the phone in their hand, or whether they're manipulating it in some way. And over the last 3 years, we've seen that number increase. So more people are, in fact, ignoring the basic law, and that puts all the people around them, whether it's other motor vehicle drivers, motorcyclists, bicycles, pedestrians, everybody who's sharing the road, at increased risk, because they're simply not paying attention. But you add to that the busyness of everybody's day. So if we get off talking about cell phones for a minute, people, as I mentioned earlier, they're also very busy in their mind. They're, you know, concerned with getting to work on time. They're looking at, you know, what do I need to make the kids for dinner tonight? And so their mind is constantly going and going and going, and that in itself can be quite a distraction. When you're behind the wheel, your one and only job is to drive, and that's what you should be doing, is just drive. Because if you think about all the other people who are motoring down the road with you, coming at you in traffic, they're also humans. They're fallible. They're thinking about things, and they can make mistakes too. So it's up to you to be the best defensive driver that you can. And that means paying attention at all times. I think.
Should we make the law more strict? I'm just wondering if the threat of punishment is a deterrent in regulating these sorts of human tendencies.
So there's a couple of things at play there. One is we have a really good law in Maine. We have one of the best. The legislature and the advocates did a very good job in that regard. What we don't have is consistent, highly visible enforcement of distracted driving. It's difficult to do. You really have to, you can't just drive around. You can just drive around looking for motor vehicles and try to catch somebody on their phone. But in order for law enforcement to really do a good job with the distracted driving enforcement, it has to be focused and it has to be purposeful, which means they need to have a plan. So sometimes you'll see that they're going out in large trucks and they have a spotter and they're seeing people with a phone in the hand, and then another car will pull them over down the road. And so if you have a good plan in place, you can catch them. So enforcement is a part of it. Education is a part of it. And at the Bureau of Highway Safety, we do a lot of public education. But that can be difficult to change people's behavior. I find over the years that I've been doing this job that the best way to change someone's behavior, unfortunately, is when it becomes really meaningful to them. So when you lose somebody important to you or you've caused somebody harm, then all of a sudden you change your behavior. So,
Lauren, thank you. Greg Jordan, any thoughts, or Andrew, any thoughts on the cell phone, smartphone issue?
Yeah, I'll just build on what Lauren said a little bit, and really appreciate the statewide campaign that they are launching to encourage people to be mindful of their driving. The city of Portland is also going to be building and launching a education campaign that, while not developed yet, will more than likely be geared toward motorists and driving without distraction. So I do think that that's part of the solution. She also mentioned and talked about enforcement. In the city of Portland, we have worked very hard to step up our enforcement around speed and red light violations, as well as, you know, being mindful or watchful of distracted driving. But it is a challenge on two fronts. One, to identify, and with staffing being a challenge in law enforcement agencies in Portland and across the state, it's been difficult for the city to deploy the kind of resources to traffic enforcement that were put on the street, you know, even 10 years ago. We are working our way back to that. And I would just echo the need to have, and we will have a plan for focusing on distracted driving by our police department kind of going forward here. And lastly, I think, I think street design matters when it comes to distracted driving. The more the road environment is a bit constrained, a bit slower, more for you to be watchful of as you're driving, you're going to be less inclined to pick up the phone, to turn the dial on the radio, and get distracted in the end. So those three things are things we're very much focused on in the city of Portland.
Yeah. Andrew?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with much of what the others have shared. Education matters. At the Bicycle Coalition of Maine, education is a core part of our work. We educate cyclists and pedestrians, and to our very best attempt, we try to educate drivers. People need to slow down and they need to put their phones away. They need to follow the rules of the road. They need to yield. They do need to pay attention and expect, if you're a driver, to encounter cyclists and pedestrians. But there's a bit of an asterisk there. We cannot educate our way outside of a design problem, which is a core problem. Again, if a road is designed like a highway, people are going to treat it like one. And we, in terms of law, yes, we do have some good laws on the book. We have the 3-foot law for cyclists. Pedestrians have a legal right of way when they are in a crosswalk. But I cannot tell you the number of times this year alone that I have had to speak with people who were hit in crosswalks because someone was not paying attention. And I'm sure all of your listeners right now can think of an immediate example when they were driving or walking and they saw someone very clearly on their phone while driving, probably a quite speedy. So we don't have to wait for new laws to make people safer. Maine, again, has those laws requiring people to yield in crosswalks, give that 3 feet, put the phone down. But we could enforce those laws more consistently, especially in places like school zones, village centers, downtowns, those high crash corridors that we know are problematic. We can also use those existing tools to lower speeds. We could have conversations. Portland is, advocates in Portland are talking about a no turn on red or a 20 is plenty campaign. We could really double down on investing in our infrastructure, traffic calming, which BCM does statewide. The key is that law enforcement and design all have to work together. And a crosswalk law, matters, but if the crosswalk is dark or too long or on a high-speed road, we therefore have a design problem. And so that's why it's really important for organizations like the Bicycle Coalition of Maine to show up and work in partnership with the city of Portland, for example, and be the squeaky wheel, not only to say, hey, this is a problem, but to get our decision makers, whether they are elected or appointed, to experience that through walk audits, bike audits, get people out there.
Yeah, we want to get into design in a minute, but I want to stick just with speed here. 20 is enough. This is an idea of like 20 mile an hour limit throughout the city.
Twenty
is plenty. Wayne writes. Wayne is a former is an engineer, former transportation safety engineer for the National Park Service and the Federal Highway Administration. And Wayne writes, at 20 miles an hour, pedestrians face approximately a 5% risk of fatality. At 40 miles an hour, fatality risk rises to 85%. One of you mentioned similar statistics.
Yeah.
That's pretty striking, isn't it? Doesn't that suggest that simply lowering the speed limit would automatically kind of have an effect, assuming people obeyed it?
Yes, Keith, you're onto something. Like I said at the start, when a person walking is hit by a vehicle traveling 20 miles an hour, about 9 out of 10 will survive. At 30 miles per hour, that drops to about 5 out of 10. And at 40 miles per hour and up, about 1 in 10. So that tells you speed is our main problem here. And the good news is there's something we can do about it at the local level and working with our partners in Augusta. People need to slow down.
Okay. We will get into more of this details, and I want to hear from, we've got a lot of callers backed up, which is great, and we want to get to them, but we're going to take a quick break. If you'd like to join the conversation, the number is 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Keith Shortall. Our topic today is pedestrian and bicycle safety. We're learning why pedestrian deaths have been on the rise in Maine, and how the state and municipalities are making changes to prevent these sometimes fatal crashes. With me today, Greg Jordan with the City of Portland. He's Assistant City Manager. Andrew Zaro, Executive Director for the Bicycle Coalition of Maine, and Lauren Stewart, Director of the Maine Bureau of Highway Safety. And we invite you to join the conversation. The number, again, is 1-800-399-3566. You can email us at talk@mainepublic.org or comment on Facebook or Instagram. Let's bring in, let's try to bring in Paul with Vision Zero. Hi, Paul. Welcome.
Good morning, and thank you so much for this really important and timely conversation. I'm calling on behalf of Vision Zero Maine. We're a new nonprofit that's part of a global movement to reduce road injuries and fatalities, which are on the rise, to zero. And we do this with a variety of tools, which your guests have already started talking about, and there's more to talk about. Today, we're calling for several actionable strategies. First is a 50% reduction in non-driver fatalities by 2030. And two, because the way we collect and disseminate crash data is highly flawed, we're launching a public crash reporting tool called 207 Crash Report. And finally, because this is all about speed, we're recommending that Maine municipalities adopt a 20 is plenty campaign for their downtowns. And I'm sure Andrew and your other guests can talk more about any of those strategies. People can find more information at visionzeromaine.org. Thank you.
Paul, thank you. So this Vision Zero idea, which has been used in other places, has been effective. What do we know about that, Greg Jordan, about what's the evidence out there that suggests that Maine communities could benefit from this?
Sure. Let me first maybe define what Vision Zero really is. In one sense, it's a goal, as our last caller just identified, of reducing or eliminating fatalities and serious injuries to zero, you know, by a certain date. It's meant to be a very systematic approach to addressing this problem. We've been talking a lot about some of the sort of solutions around this, but it really brings together engineering, enforcement, education, and evaluation, I would say, are the pillars of a Vision Zero program. So you're attacking it from multiple different angles. It's the only way to really solve what is, in many respects, a wicked problem, a very complex problem. And in Portland, we have adopted Vision Zero as a city policy. The council passed a resolution back in 2025 directing staff to move us in this direction, and we are working hard to do just that. We've talked a lot about some of the things that we're trying to advance along speed, road design, education, and enforcement already. These things can take some time, especially on the street design side. Transportation projects need funding. They are complicated to plan, engineer, permit, and deliver. But we are working hard to advance those as quickly as possible. To your question about has this been demonstrated to be successful? And I think that it has been. One of the exemplars or examples that we are looking to as a model for this work is Hoboken, New Jersey, actually. Different urban context, a very, very tight, dense urban city next to New York City, but they have aggressively adopted a Vision Zero framework. They have transformed their roads, they've lowered their speeds, they've prioritized bicyclists and pedestrians, and done a lot to move that community in that direction. And they have effectively reduced or eliminated their fatalities and serious injuries. There hasn't been one since, I believe, 2017 or 18. I could be getting that wrong, but I know it's been almost 10 years since that community experienced that kind of act or crash. So that's kind of where we're trying to head. Again, a different community, but certainly a leader for the country to build this work on.
I looked at some of the cities around the world that seem to have a good reputation for low pedestrian fatality rates. Not surprisingly, maybe Oslo, Norway, topped the list. Also, possibly not surprisingly, Helsinki, Finland. But New York City was also cited, which is a bit of a surprise, and that used to be, the capital of taking your life into your own hands in the street. And then Munich, Germany, which this is a country that has no speed limit and yet has managed to design its infrastructure in a way and other to take steps to limit pedestrian fatality. So there are a lot of examples to go by, I guess, is the point. Andrew, did you?
Yeah, just to chime in on what Paul and Greg shared. So yeah, I mean, the Bicycle Coalition of Maine has been leading the statewide, you know, work for 35 years, and it's been rooted in the basic idea behind Vision Zero, and it's that no one should be killed or seriously injured simply because they are trying to move about their community. I think that's something most people can agree on. And Vision Zero work we're seeing happen at the region. The Greater Portland Council of Governments has been doing a great deal of work on Vision Zero, and Portland has stepped up with their resolution. You know, I think a lot of it is true that there, you know, we have a lot of work to do on crash data and collection, and making sure that not only is it consistent and standardized, but that information is getting to district attorneys in a timely way. Over the last year and a half, we've worked very closely with the city, with GPCOG, with other municipalities throughout all 16 counties to push forward this work via technical assistance, things like walk bike audits, you know, advocacy around complete streets, which we're really starting to see happen after years and years of work by the Bicycle Coalition of Maine. But this work, again, I can't emphasize this enough, that it can't just be a goal on paper. It can't just be a tagline. It has to become about safer speeds, safer crossings, better infrastructure, stronger laws, and real investment. Investment that's going to last 5, 10, 15 plus years from now.
Yeah, Lauren?
Yeah, thanks very much. I think that both Greg and Andrew have articulated very well the safe system approach, which is the understanding that in order to make our roadways safer, we need safer vehicles, we need safer speeds, we need safer roads, we need better access to post-crash care, and we need safer people, because death and serious injuries, as I said earlier, are completely unacceptable. People will make mistakes, and the responsibility for using the roadway is shared by all road users. So the Vision Zero is rooted in the safe system approach, and I'm happy to have had Paul on this morning to talk about the Vision Zero program.
Let's go back to the phones. We'll go to State Representative Grayson Luckner. Welcome to the program.
Hey, Keith. Hey, everybody. Thanks for having me on the call. I think this issue, we act like it's some kind of unsolvable mystery, when in fact, and you alluded to it a little bit earlier, other countries have largely solved this by investing in adequate public transportation. And if we keep cars off the road, it's going to keep everybody safer. And I understand, you know, Maine is a large rural state, not a lot of density, but our lack of investment in public infrastructure, the price we pay for that are pedestrian deaths. So I'd like to hear that be part of this conversation.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for calling. Any thoughts on that? Obviously, we have tried to make an effort with buses. There is a train that goes out of state, and sort of we're trying to move it through more of the state, but it's expensive.
Let me jump in on that, if it's okay. I have some experience with the public transit world, and I think our region, having been executive director of the Greater Portland Transit District up until a few years ago, before coming to Portland, and in the one sense, the state, our communities, they invest a lot in our transportation system. I think there is. I don't think it's a surprise that there is a bit of an imbalance between the level of funding we put into our broader transportation system that does prioritize automobiles and the level of investment we put into public transit, both bus, rail, ferry, demand response, bike, ped as well. We need to keep pushing the envelope on that investment. Transit in the region has gotten better over the last 10 or 15 years. Ridership, but for the pandemic, has been going in the right direction. And it is a solution. I mean, using public transit is one of the safest forms of transportation that you can use. But what we often say in the public transit world too is that every transit rider is also a pedestrian. And so you need that pedestrian infrastructure, that bicycle infrastructure, to be able to use that mode effectively and be safe in doing so. I want to also go to, I'm glad the state representative kind of chimed in here, because I think one thing that is super important is the role of the Maine Department of Transportation, certainly in this issue statewide, but also within our cities, whether it's Bangor, Augusta, or Portland. In the case of Portland, the Maine Department of Transportation has jurisdiction over every single one of our arterial roads across the city, and most of our sort of what we call collector level roads. The city itself has jurisdiction only over our local roads, so more like neighborhood streets. So when we're talking about infrastructure and investment and complete streets and speeds on those roads that are controlled by the Maine Department of Transportation, they have to be at the table in those conversations. We work with them really well. We try to partner and advance safety improvements, complete streets improvements, as funding allows and as their projects kind of come online. But that conversation on this issue does need to involve MainDOT. It needs to be held at the legislature. The Transportation Committee, the Joint Transportation Committee of both the House and the Senate, work with MainDOT, talk about its budget. That's a lot of where some of this conversation should be happening too.
Okay. I do want to get a couple more calls in here and talk about specific some infrastructure points. I'll go to a team in Portland, so hang on, a team. But first I'm going to go to Al in Turner, who's making a point, I believe, Al, right, about pedestrians themselves.
Yes. Yes, sir.
Yes, go ahead. You're on the
air. Given all the commentary previously, I can't help but agree with all of it. However, it seems to be absent the other half of the equation. In observing people all over the state, because I worked all over the state, and even in my local area, you see people walking out of a store with their head in foam, not even attending to whether there's any cars coming by. And often, because of the safety record in the past, pedestrians feel comfortable stepping into the road, sometimes without looking, and sometimes even when they look, they step out in front of a vehicle.
Yeah.
I think that other half of the equation should be addressed.
There, yes, Al, thank you. There are steps, right, Andrew, that pedestrians should take and be mindful of, even though they're at such a great disadvantage here usually.
Yeah, we hear this a lot. You know, I often joke that for leading a bike organization, I drive a lot. Maine's a big state, so I get to sometimes spend one day in the beginning of the day down in York and end the day up near Waterville. And one thing that I do hear often when it comes to a pedestrian-involved crash, or just vulnerable road users in general, and, you know, listen, I do think it's fair to say that everybody has a responsibility, because we do. People walking should stay aware. We tell them to. They should use crossings and crosswalks when they are available and be predictable. But we have to be really careful not to let that become the conversation, because the reality is that when the person walking, that's the most vulnerable person in the interaction with a vehicle. A distracted pedestrian is not carrying the same risk as a distracted driver operating a several thousand pound vehicle. And so therefore, the burden of responsibility has to be proportionate to the harm that someone can cause. And this is exactly why we need a safe systems approach. People do make mistakes. Vision Zero talks about that. But drivers make mistakes. Pedestrians make mistakes. Cyclists make mistakes. And the transportation system should be designed so that one mistake does not become a death sentence. And so, yeah, we need to encourage everyone to be alert and respectful, but we need to not use the possibility of a pedestrian distraction to avoid talking about speed, safe design, crosswalk, vehicle size, accountability. The goal is not to assign blame, though. The goal is to build a system where people survive.
I want to talk about specific changes to the infrastructure that we can make. You've sort of mentioned some, but there, I want to get a little bit more into that and take your calls, and we will talk to a team on the other side. But right now, we're going to take another break. The number to join, 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Keith Shortall. People driving cars, riding bikes, walking down the street, all are at risk of injury. We're finding out how these crashes can be avoided or prevented. My guests are Andrew Zorro with the Bicycle Coalition of Maine, Lauren Stewart with the Maine Bureau of Highway Safety, and Greg Jordan with the City of Portland. Share your comments, questions, email talk@mainepublic.org. You can also post on Facebook or Instagram or call 1-800-399-3566. I want to bring in a team who is calling from Portland. Hiya, team. Welcome.
Hi, Keith. Hi, Greg, Andrew, Lauren. I appreciate the conversation. There's a lot of good stuff here. I have two hats on. One is I'm a father and a neighborhood guy who has a lot of kids and families walk through the streets, and I live near a school. The other hat is I'm running for city council at large, and I've heard a lot of concerns from people who are afraid to drive, people who are afraid to ride their bikes, and people who are afraid to walk. And the four things that come up are, you know, permanent traffic calming curbs, things that extend out, removing some parking spots to increase visibility, especially to prioritize around schools and parks, electronic flashing lights, those rapid flashing beacons. I heard it's too expensive, but when kids get hit, what's more expensive, the light or life of a child? And what are the other two things? The other two things are the nuts and bolts, the timing of maintenance. I heard a guy tell me about the crosswalks not being painted timely, and the bike lanes being painted. Those visibility pieces are important too. And then the last thing is, living near a school, Reiki, there are cars that make a two-lane street a one-lane street because they're dropping their kids off. People park inside the crosswalk too close. So if a child is trying to cross the street, visibility is zero to none. So enforcing parking violations and traffic violations is supremely important, near schools especially. I appreciate y'all.
Yeah, okay, Atim, thank you. He raised a number of points, I think. Some of them have been brought up before. I'll let Greg, you respond to that. And then I want to talk about the median strip issue, the recent accident with the person on the median strip. But anyway, if you want to respond to a team first.
Yeah, the caller brings up a lot of the interventions that were Portland has been advancing and putting into place over many years, and we're trying to accelerate that work. The city council approved $1.2 million for the next budget year for Vision Zero related work across the city. And that money is going to go toward things like upgraded and new crosswalks with the rapid flashing beacons that he mentioned, which we know are an important sort of a safety feature for those crossings. I won't go through all of the things that he mentioned, but I wanted to hit that. And also he brought up the issue of parking near intersections and near crosswalks. This is something that we call daylighting. It's making sure that there are not parking stalls near crosswalks or near intersections that create a blind spot or a sightline problem for both drivers and the pedestrians trying to perhaps cross. That's something that we are looking at very closely right now. I can say that we have, I think, many instances across the city where we can do a better job of pulling those parking spaces back to make sure that visibility is there. And so I just wanted to respond to two of those things that we're actively working on.
If we can move to there was a crash on the median strip. A man was on the median strip and was hit by a car. A few years ago, Portland had tried to outlaw people being on median strips, you know, panhandling, let's just call it what it was. And that was found to be unconstitutional. So now we're in this situation where is there anything we can do to make the median strip not usable, or what is the possible answer there? Any of you have any thoughts about this median strip problem?
Yeah, I'll kick off. So you're right. Years ago, the city attempted to sort of prevent that kind of activity in those spaces. It was ruled unconstitutional on First Amendment grounds. However, the ruling does carve out possible territory limit any activity on a median or in a roadway area like that, as long as it's pretty narrowly tailored. So areas that have particular safety related issues. I'll point out or note that the city of Bangor has had an ordinance on the books for a couple of years now that is very, very narrowly tailored. It limits the city's ability to enforce not being on median strips and only at certain places that meet certain sort of key criteria. And so that may be something that we want to explore. We certainly don't want to, be less of a sort of a helpful or supportive community for those of us who are truly more in need across the city. But that should be balanced against the safety trade-offs of being active in those median strips.
Yeah. Andrew?
Yeah, so this is something that came up right after that fatal crash happened. We see it every once in a while. Last year, a pedestrian was killed in Portland. They were walking in the street. It was in the winter. The sidewalks weren't plowed. And we often want to have the inclination to say, well, should that person have been there? Should they have been in the median? And, you know, medians are intended for people, depending on how they're designed, for people to have sort of that safe place as they're crossing a pretty wide street. In this scenario, that's essentially a four-lane highway, two lanes going one direction each way, which is meant for cars to go super fast in and out of the city. And guess what? That's what cars do. So someone was hit and killed there. But my question would involve, okay, let's take a step back. A couple months before, in November, a jogger who was following pretty much all the rules a jogger could do was hit and killed a couple blocks away from that one at another dangerous intersection. There was a 9-year-old walking and hit in a crosswalk about a month and a half ago in Portland on Woodford Street. And so I am reluctant to assign blame to the type of pedestrian, whether they are panhandling or just going for a jog or checking their mailbox. I think the question, again, needs to come from a deeper place. Why is the roadway environment creating such dangerous exposure? And what can we do to reduce the risk of having someone seriously injured or killed? And again, back to a safe systems approach, back to a human-centered approach, identify those high-risk medians, like the one at that intersection, reduce those speeds, improve those sight lines, safer signaling. I encourage any listener to go and try and interact with some of those intersections and those signals. You're going to be waiting a really long time and you're going to see a lot of cars that do not care that you are there. And that is just our reality. So the point is not that medians are a safe place to stand or not. The point is that when a human being is predictably present near traffic, our system has a responsibility to reduce the chance of them being killed.
Yeah. Lauren, did you have something you wanted to add? I wasn't sure.
Honestly, thanks, Keith, but I don't think I can add anything more than what Andrew just said.
Okay, let's go to Robert in Westbrook. Hi, Robert, welcome.
Hi. I'm calling about the recent uptake in scooters, electric bicycles, electric skateboards. They are out of control. They have no rules. Most of them do not wear helmets. They do not pay any attention to road rules, and somebody's going to get seriously injured because of these things. And I'm not against electric scooters. I'm not against them, but there needs to be some training to teach these kids. And you know, a lot of them are like 12, 13, 14 years old, out a helmet. And I went beside one the other day, and I was going 40 miles an hour, keeping up with them.
Yeah. Robert, thank you. Yeah, we're going to try to get to the answer here. Andrew.
Oh, he is speaking my language. Okay, so this is something that's happening nationwide, and Maine is certainly a part of this as well. BCM is on top of it. We worked on it at the National Bike Summit in DC, and we're already working on it in preparation for the 2027 legislative session. For our listeners, e-bikes are an important part of the transportation solution. They help people replace car trips. They commute, ride with kids, keep biking as they age and keep it fun. But we need to distinguish the legal definition and difference between e-bikes from high-powered e-motos, which is what the caller is referencing. Maine currently has a 3-class e-bike system that the Bicycle Coalition of Maine was very involved with getting passed. Those limit things like speed, power, and how the motor works. And recently we're seeing a proliferation of devices that are being marketed as e-bikes, but they are not. They are closer to a electric motorcycles. They are essentially unregulated. So BCM has been working in preparation for the legislative session, separate from our education, on presenting some policies that are going to be in support. We're seeing this happen nationwide. Some states are doing a great job, some not so much, but we're working with national partners at the League of American Cyclists and People for Bikes. But overall, BCM strongly supports safe, legal e-bikes, but we need to make it clear that not every electric two-wheel device is an e-bike, because that is not the reality. So if you want to get involved, please reach out, go to bikemaine.org. We will certainly be calling on our community spokes and our supporters to help us in the next legislative session to write this policy.
Lauren, yeah, you had your hand up.
Yeah, thanks. Andrew is right. This is not just the Maine issue. It is a national issue. And every state has a state highway safety office like mine. And one of the entities that we work with very closely is the Governor's Highway Safety Association out of Washington, D.C. And they are working on research and publications and recommendations for all states on how they can address these e-bike, e-scooter issues through legislation and public education and you know, all the different ways that we can do it. So there should be some good things coming soon.
Let's go to Winston in Portland. Hi, Winston. Welcome.
Hi. I'm Winston Lumpkins, former chair and board member of Portland's Ad Hoc Bicycle and Pedestrian Advisory Committee, which is open to all Portland residents. Because deaths are exceptionally more likely to result from crashings involving pedestrians when speeds exceed 20 miles per hour, as has been kind of litigated on this call really well, and I thank everybody for that, that coverage. The Portland Bicycle and Pedestrian Advisory Committee is calling for a 20-mile-an-hour speed limit in Portland. There is some complexity with state law and the DOT, but the city can do this if it takes responsibility for setting all speed limits on all our city streets, which, if it's just 20 miles an hour, wouldn't actually be that much of an engineering lift. And I think due to streetlights and stop signs in an urban area like Portland, this wouldn't change driver trip time much at all, because you would just eliminate that unsafe speeding between stoplights that you see. And even without enforcement, we've seen in Boston and the country of Wales that when you have a 20-mile-an-hour speed limit or a 25-mile-an-hour speed limit, you can dramatically reduce speeds that are over 35 miles an hour, those speeds which are so dangerous for pedestrians. And finally, we're all pedestrians the moment we step out of our cars. So, like, no one is safe. This is an issue for all Mainers. Thank you.
Winston, thank you. Only a couple of minutes left. I'll let you. Any, we've sort of talked about some of this already. Heather called in, but we couldn't use the call, but points to another issue, which we could probably spend an hour on. But I do think we can weigh in, which is this: the aging of Maine drivers. And I don't want to open this can of worms here at the end, but is this not an issue, a contributor to this, making sure that people can continue to be alert and make good decisions as they age behind the wheel? Lauren Stewart.
Yeah, thank you, Heather, for that question. But we are an aging state, right? And we've already talked about the lack of public transportation that's available. So older drivers are keeping their licenses longer, sometimes longer than they should, for cognitive reasons, but mostly because they need to get from point A to point B to continue to take care of themselves. And without some sort of additional public infrastructure to support that, then the most that we can do is try to implement programs and projects to help the senior drivers and their families remove those licenses, or to help them find resources to continue to do what they need to do every day in their lives. So it is a big topic, much more than we can get to here in the next couple of minutes, but it's important.
Yeah, and in fact, we don't have a couple of minutes. We have no time left whatsoever. So I want to thank you all for joining us today. It was an interesting hour. Lauren Stewart, Director of the Maine Bureau of Highway Safety, Greg Jordan, Assistant City Manager for the City of Portland, and Andrew Zaro, Executive Director for the Bicycle Coalition of Maine. Today's sound engineer was Sam Tracy. Our theme music was composed by Mike Jandro. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Keith Shortall. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.